Gentlemen, we went over the rules in the dressing room. I want to caution you to keep this fight clean at all times, and what I say, you must obey.
Live from the WKOM studio in downtown Columbia, it's time to wake up and get woke. It's Three Dudes with a View.
Let's get it all!
All right, welcome back. Well, good Monday morning, Three Dudes with a View. My name is Del Kennedy. I am dude number three. It's a cloudy Monday out there, and there's an inch of rain on the way. When, tomorrow night, Clay? Is that it?
Starts later tonight, I believe. Wind advisory today, I believe.
There we go. Springing. It is the time of year for those strong storms coming out of the northeast, tornadoes, all that kind of stuff. That's spring in Middle Tennessee, folks. Dude number two, Clayton Harris, how are you?
Doing well, Del. Good morning, everybody.
Last time I talked to you, you were headed for a Little League game over the weekend.
Little League practice.
There we go.
Harper is playing Little League coach pitch, so it's 5-, 6-, and 7-year-olds, and it's
so Harper's 5-7.
She is six, and she's still playing with the boys, but it actually her team actually has like four girls on the team, so I told Tiffany I think they're going to be pretty good, because at that age girls are a little bit more, I guess,
focused.
Yeah, focused and mature. So
not chasing butterflies in the outfield, that kind of thing.
Correct. Yes, sir.
Yeah, pretty good. Dude number one, Mr. Jim York. I don't see him.
He's coming. He is actually coming in as we speak.
All right, and I'm going to introduce Mike Roden, who's with us every Monday. He was 25 years my colleague in the U.S. Attorney's Office in Nashville. A good close friend, but now he takes the liberal point of view. We were able to have fun talking to each other every day and working on cases together and whatnot for all those years, but he had a picture of Barack Obama on the wall, and I did. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, America. How are you today?
All right. Mr. Jim York, dude number one, good morning.
Good morning, Dale. Good morning, everybody.
All right. Folks, we have with us this morning Representative Scott Sepicki. He represents the eastern half of Maury County, basically. And the legislature is right there in the middle of almost everything. Representative Sepicki, good morning. Well, we had him. All right.
He's running scared.
There we go. We had him. Hopefully he'll come back.
It's showing he's still on there, but he may have had a call or something he had to take. Yeah.
May have had to. All right, Clayton, let's talk about this LSU women's
game. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. We can't see you. We saw you for a second, but we can hear you.
I'm working on it. Give me 1 second.
All right.
The LSU women's basketball coach called a press conference to allege chicanery on behalf of the Washington Post. Clayton, you know about this.
Yeah, Kim Mulkey. And yeah, she's
mad.
She's very upset because the reporter, she declined to do an interview with the reporter, and then the reporter called some former coaches of hers and made it sound like he used the reference, I'm down here with Coach Mulkey. The reporter was not with her. It made it sound like they were all working together on this story, and it just, it's just ethically not right for the journalist.
My understanding is Kim Mulkey was early on, said, let's get back to playing ball. We don't need to be doing all this testing for COVID. We don't need masks. Let's just play ball.
Yeah, she upset some people.
Yeah, the national press has been after.
At what time did she say that? At what time frame? At the height of the pandemic or later on? Or do we know?
I'm not clear, Clay. Do you know?
It was right towards the beginning. The pandemic happened in, around this time 4 years ago.
Correct.
So it was right during the middle of basketball or towards the end of basketball season.
I was back, Mike, you may not know this, but 2020, the part of our bread and butter here is broadcasting sports,
Sure.
And there were no sports.
Yeah.
There were none at all. I mean, men have been locked in with their wives for weeks, Yeah. And
I will say this. I think it's fashionable now to look back and say we overreacted during the pandemic. And I think it's probably true that on some things we probably did. I would only say, at the time, thousands and thousands of people dying every day, and we had no vaccine in sight, and we didn't know all that much about it. I kind of think I kind of give the country a pass on maybe overreacting a little bit. Again, we can now look back and say we made some mistakes, we made some overreactions, but at the time, I think, you know.
I think we got Respinski back. Scott, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Good morning. Thanks for joining us this morning. Well, you begin, but I guess you're going to give us a legislative update. You're right in the middle of things up there, and you're also during the time period where what's going to pass sort of is shaking out, and what's not going to pass is shaking out. The impact fee is the first thing I want to ask about, but apparently we're still making progress on that for Maury County, right?
We are. That's correct. The bill will be on notice this week in the finance subcommittee. It is a formality. It should pass on to the full finance next week and then be on calendar rules. So hopefully in the House, we'll be voting on this on the House floor in about 3 weeks.
That's
Senate's
awesome.
Senate's going to be a different story right now. We're running into some heavy opposition in the Senate right now. So we're going to do our best to do everything we can to get it through the House first. And then we'll shift our attention to the Senate.
And oddly enough, in my recollection is the Senate passed it last year.
That is correct. But remember, I told everybody on the Senate side knew it was going to fail in the House.
Okay.
And so you kind of take sometimes a hollow vote there, knowing that somebody else is going to do your dirty work. Well, this year we've been working with the builders, the realtors, the commercial builders. We've been working with different counties. We've come up with a compromise belt that I think you guys have talked about that everybody seems to be on board with, which is going to benefit Maury County to roughly about $5 million a year.
Right,
but the Senate's going to be a different story right now.
Oh wow! And again, growth paying for growth is the idea. I know you've worked hard on it. Congratulations mm-hmm. on making progress in the House.
Delk, there's also another bill that I've signed on to also, returning 20% of the sales tax revenue of Maury County back to the county for school maintenance. That would net Maury County an additional $2 million if we're able to pass that bill. And then in the school Education Freedom Act, there's stuff in there for changes to TESA, which would net Maury County roughly about another $4.5 million. So if we can get all three of these passed, we'll be able to free up for Maury County and send down about $10 million a year. Williamson County's looking at about probably $20 to $21 million.
And TESA, of course, being the state funding formula for the public schools.
That is correct. Yes.
Yeah. All right. And I guess the next thing that's on people's minds more than anything is the you call it the Education Freedom Act or charter. I mean, not charter schools. I'm going to get everybody confused.
Vouchers
would be the shorthand. My understanding, there's still three different versions of that, one in the House, one in the Senate, and one is the governor's.
That is correct. The governor's is the original version. It's pretty wide open. It has a lot of the pitfalls in it that we've seen in other states, especially what we've seen in Arizona with the expansion of it getting out of control. There's been some other concerns with it about homeschoolers and about U.S. our non-U.S. citizens being able to take part of it. The Senate's version is a little bit different. It still allows homeschoolers. Still allows non-U.S. citizens to participate, but it has a little bit different flavor where it's wide open in year two also, and it also allows public-to-public transfers of students. So a student could leave Maury County and go to Williamson County if they have a spot. The state funding through TESA, like we've talked about, would follow the student, and then the local fee that, let's say, Williamson County charges, I think it's around $2,500 to attend as an out-of-district student would be paid for by the state through that scholarship program.
That's the Senate version.
That's the Senate version. And then the House version has a lot of the protections that we've learned and the pitfalls that we've learned from other states about what they've done. We put in existence to prevent the little pop-up schools from happening all over the state. You have to be in existence for 3 years. You have to have students that are there for 3 years. You must submit your academic data to the State Board of Education, and then the State Board of Education can accredit you And if they do not, then you would not be able to participate in the program.
So we also prevent these what you've seen in other states are these little pop-up schools just designed to collect the state money. And so these provisions should function as a safeguard against that kind of thing.
Correct. So you have to prove that you have a track record of being able to educate the students moving forward. And then you can apply for accreditation through the state. It doesn't have to be granted by the state, but it can be granted by the state. But unable to participate in the House's version, you would have to be an accredited institution in existence for 3 years. We also put caps on the expansion of it. We did not like what happened in other states. We're seeing Alabama just passed it. And in year two, it's wide open where it could be $1 billion worth of funding. We didn't want to get into that in Tennessee. So in the House version, it's 20,000 in the first year, and it can only expand off of two criteria. Number one,
20,000 students, you mean?
20,000 students. I'm sorry, you're right.
Statewide.
Yeah.
Okay.
20,000 statewide. And then it can only increase if the usage hits within 10% of the 20,000. And then it can only expand 20% every year, still subject to the funding of the General Assembly. Okay. Non-U.S. citizens would not be able to participate in it because this would be deemed a state benefit outside the normal school funding. And then, as you know, like a lot of people have been talking about, that's one section of the House's bill. There's 49 sections to the House's bill. The other 48 sections of the bill have to do with public schools. Less testing on our students, more teaching time, less evaluations. I can go on and on and on, but the 48 other sections have to do with transforming public education based off of the comments that I've been making to your show for the last 5 years of being a state representative from talking to teachers and administrators about how their hands are tied into public schools. And we have fought hard with the governor's office and with the Department of Education and all the different lobbyist groups to try to get these measures through the House. And we've never been able to do it because we've always been told no, and they've worked against us, et cetera, et cetera. And now we have the opportunity to transform our public schools in a way that have never been done before, basically going back to the way that we used to do education, where we're focusing on teachers spending time in the classroom, teaching the kids the fundamentals and the basics and the standards. And then instead of doing the 15 tests a year, there'd be the three benchmarks they take right now just to track that they're moving forward. And then they would take an end of course, and our end of course testing would be reflective of what the federal government requires, where we just test English, language arts, and mathematics in grades 3 through 9, science every 3 years, social studies once in 6 through 9. And then we will shift in high school away from the TCAPS and go to the ACT component so that therefore our kids are going to take the ACT multiple times to give them the best chance to score the highest grade possible, which allows access into higher ed, and then also do the ACT work keys, which is very important because that evaluates a student who's in career technical on how they're performing, ready to go to a career technical. So a lot of stuff in the House bill, but Delk, as you know, they have to match to pass.
Well, now, can you handicap that at this point, or is it still too soon to tell?
Well, we are negotiating. I think what the House is looking for is not what the Senate wants to take away from the House bill, because we deem the protections we put in place for the scholarship are valid. And also the things that we're trying to do for public schools are transformational. I think we're willing to have a discussion on what the Senate wants to add in, not take out. And so that's the conversation we're looking for. I've heard two things the Senate wants to do. Number one is they want to somehow figure out to find a way the money to put the teacher pay raises, the strict pay raises, because we're using that money to increase the amount of money the state's going to pay for teachers' insurance from 45% to 60%, right, which would therefore save our teachers 15% of their premiums right now, which is a lot of money. It's on average, we figured it's about $300 to $400 a month for sure.
That's health insurance for our teachers, yeah.
That's correct. And what the Senate also wants to do is the governor did make a promise. Remember, we're on our track to $50,000 as a base pay for teachers. Well, if we don't put the $120 million in for that, We have to put $240 million in next year to true it up. So the Senate wants us to go ahead and add in the $120 million to keep us on track for the teacher base pay up to $50,000. And then also they want to do something with the public-to-public transfers, which gives some of us a little bit of consternation, but sometimes you don't get everything you want, so you got to compromise and try to figure out how to make that work. So that's the public-to-public being the
for instance, the scenario you described where a Maury County student might wish to attend Williamson County schools.
That's correct. Yes, sir.
Okay. And of course, the Senate and the House have to agree or it doesn't happen at all. Can you handicap the chances that the Senate and House are going to come together? I mean, what's the chance that nothing happens at all?
Well, I think something's going to happen. I would say us coming together right now, probably 65-35-4. And as we work on this now, you know, we're up against the shot clock now.
What is the timeline? Yeah.
Well, that's the magic question. If everything moves forward now, the Education Freedom Act is not on finance sub this week. So from whenever it hits finance sub, it's going to take 3 more weeks to get it to the House floor. So now we're looking at minimum of probably the 3rd to the 4th week of April before we can get it to the House floor. And then we got to figure out how to marry this thing up with the Senate. My gut feeling is we'll be in session till probably the first week of May.
There you go. Okay. Clayton, Mike, Mr. York. Before we do, Scott, we're going to keep rolling through the break because I know you had a limited amount of time. And so we're just going to stay with you as long as you can stay with us.
You got me for 10 more minutes.
Okay. And before we do move on to questions, though, are there any other legislative issues that should be brought up?
Well, there's one more issue that I want everybody to know that we're working on right now. I've met with the homeschool people, especially Ms. Boyd and her group.
Right.
And we're going to be working on a constitutional amendment to protect the rights of homeschoolers. So I don't know if we're going to be able to get it done this year because we're up against it right now. But next year, hoping with reelection, that'll be one of the things I'll be carrying next year is a constitutional amendment to protect the rights of homeschoolers.
Yeah, I'm sure Ms. Boyd and those around her would be very interested in having that happen. All right, Mike, Clayton, Mr. York.
I think Mr. York had a question.
Yeah, I was going to ask, across the state, I'm seeing where school boards and superintendents are vehemently objecting to the Voucher Act, but what you call the Education Freedom Act. And I would like to see Maury County's school board pass a resolution either for this act or against this act. So when there are so many school districts, particularly rural school districts, in awe about you all pushing this, Scott, and I know you're a proponent of it, what do you have to say about that? What do you have to say about these small districts that not going to benefit one school in their whole county? And this voucher bill is being pushed like nothing, like it's the only thing going.
So that's the best question, Mr. York, that anybody's ever asked me so far. And here's the answer to that. That is why in the House version, we've changed those dynamics of the funding in TESA, such as every district will get $75 for their students to use for the maintenance of their schools. The rural districts will get additional stipends for being rural or sparse or smaller, which therefore the financial benefits of this will be measurable to the small rural districts. You bring up a great point, such as a Perry County. Perry County doesn't have a private school within probably an hour and a half of them. So the whole school choice thing will not affect Perry County or Wayne County, these smaller districts, because there's no schools for these students to go to, but they will financially benefit from the public school portion, including their students and their teachers that will have less testing and more teaching time to get their students across the finish line. And then one other thing, Mr. York, is I know there's districts, school boards, and some county commissions across the state, roughly 67 of them across the state, have put some kind of legislation opposing the school choice portion, but they have yet to put forth any type of legislation or any type of resolution opposing the public school portion of it. And then lastly, remember, out of the 67 districts that have said something, that leaves, there's 242 county commissions and districts across the state that have said nothing. So an overwhelming majority of the districts and county commissions across the state and school boards have decided to sit this one out. Because well, I think
there's only 95 counties in Tennessee, Scott. Where do you get 200 and some county commissions?
Well, there's 147 different school boards, and there's 95 counties. That adds up to 247 different.
Oh yeah,
boards.
Okay, but you're mixing apples and oranges. The school boards need to. The school boards that are against this program have already documented and passed resolutions against it, and you all in the legislature refuse to adhere to what your constituents are saying.
Mr. York,
Mr. York, that's not necessarily true because 67 school boards have made a statement against school choice, but Mr. York, all of those school board decisions have come out prior to the House's version that has all the benefits for public schools. And so what we ask those school boards is, we know that you may or may not like school choice, but wait till you see the House's version. And a lot of those school boards jumped the gun, and my gut feeling is they may be having a little bit of buyer's remorse. Now, what they're concerned about is all of the public school stuff will be stripped out of the House bill, and then it'll be an up or down vote on school choice. And that, Mr. York, yes, 67 out of 147 districts have made a statement. That's not even half.
Clayton, do you have a question?
Yeah, Scott. So if I live in Fayetteville and I want to send my kid to Madison Academy in Alabama, how does that work?
Yeah, that would be outside the state. That would not work.
It would not work. Okay, second question. What is the public polling? I'm sure you guys up there have some type of public, you know, some type of polling that shows what the general public's thinking. And what are your constituents telling you?
So we keep track of this, all of the pros and cons that come into my office, and depending on what day it is and what mailer has gone out or what news story has come out, it's trending of the people that are voicing an opinion at our office. It's roughly about 50-50 either way.
Scott,
The polling numbers we're seeing that have been done by six or seven different groups ranges anywhere from 55% opposed up to 78% for.
John, excuse me.
I can tell you this real quick. The things that have happened in Arizona and other states are one of the main reasons why people object to this is because the cost getting out of control. If you read the House version, and Delk, I think I've sent it to you or Clayton.
Yeah, I have it.
You can take a look at it in Section 1, and you can see all of the provisions we put in place to try to make sure that none of this is going to get out of control in the state of Tennessee. And the people that are most economically disadvantaged will be at the front of the line to make sure they get the first shot.
Yeah.
I think Mike had a question.
Yeah, Mike's got a question.
So. Yeah. I believe you mentioned this in the House bill, that people who are not citizens of the United States cannot participate in the program. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yes, sir.
Okay. When you say that, that includes both people who are here illegally, put them aside for a moment, and people who are here legally but just haven't put in the time to raise their hand and become citizens yet. So is there a distinction between those two groups, or if you're not a citizen, you're not eligible for the program?
That is correct. That was one of the discussions we had up here in the General Assembly. And we wanted, because this is a state benefit, that we wanted to limit it to only U.S. citizens. So those that are here, quote unquote, legally through paper or whatever they want, they would be ineligible from participating in the scholarship program.
Okay. Yeah.
And of course, Mike and I, our lawyer, I understand that the Tennessee Attorney General has said that the provisions about citizens in the school choice bill do pass constitutional muster.
On the House version, and that is because we are not affecting the opportunity for the public education component in the TESA funding formula. So they'd be, you know, everybody who shows up to school in our public schools will have the funding behind them, as guaranteed by the state constitution.
Has the governor given anything, any signal as to which he prefers, the House bill, the Senate bill, or something in between?
Yeah, so here's where a little bit of history comes into play. I'm going to have to finish up with this right here.
Okay.
So the governor originally filed this bill, and I think it was like House Bill 2526 or something like that. And we had a very polite conversation with the governor that we didn't believe that what he wanted to do was going to be feasible in the House. And so we put together our plan, House Bill 1183. This was the first time that anybody up here has ever been able to tell me that a governor allowed his bill to be taken off notice and switched his support behind House Bill 1183, the House and Senate version. So I guess for lack of a better word, he has gotten behind what we're trying to move forward. And that's where we're waiting with the supplemental budget to come out to show the funding mechanism behind it. But I guess the short answer is I believe the governor's behind what we're trying to do in the House is because not only it accomplishes the task of giving parents an off-ramp for their kids whose needs aren't being met, it also transforms our public educational system that I've gotten phone calls from representatives and senators across the country are very interested in what we're doing with this bill in Tennessee.
Scott, real quick, John Ray Clemens, Democrat from Nashville, was on with us, I think, last week. And
my best friend.
There you go. There you go. Right. But he said there's been a pilot program for vouchers in his district that's been there 3 or 4 years. And I asked him about it. And I believe that pilot program was done in Nashville and Memphis, correct?
That is correct. It expanded to Hamilton last year.
Okay. And I said, Representative Clemens, have you talked to any parents or schools who've utilized these vouchers and talked to them, to the parents, students, whomever, you know, did it work? Did it not work? And he said, well, no, I haven't. He said, because nobody utilizes the vouchers. There's nobody to talk to. What has been the pilot program experience, if you know?
So the pilot program was instituted, like you said, 3-4 years ago. So it was, I think, in 2019 when I got up here. We passed it, and then it was tied up in court for 2 years in appeals. Finally, what was ruled constitutional, it was this is going to be the second year of it. We'll have the second year of data coming out this spring. Everywhere you look, when kids are leaving failing institutions and they go to a private school, I guess for lack of a better word, rigor, that new kind of environment, they struggle for about 2 or 3 years because they're trying to get, number one, caught up, and number two, it's different. I mean, you're in different rigor, different discipline, different kinds of accountability. But what we see in all of these studies, in year 4 and 5, they get acclimated, and then, boy, they really start to take off. If we instituted this program and kids left failing public schools and went to a private school and they were getting straight A's, my first question would be to the private schools, what are you doing? So we know there's going to be some growing pains in this, but if we stick with this, and let's face it, I mean, we've pulled some private schools across the state. We think there's maybe capacity for maybe up to 10, 11,000 students across our private schools. If you know, like Delk in Maury County, most all of our private schools are on wait lists right now. So
yeah.
We are working. What saved Florida was when the diocese invested about $2 billion and built about 12 to 13 K-12 private schools across the state. You know, we're going to have to rely on those big private, like the diocese, to come in and open up K-12 schools across the state to open up capacity and opportunity for students. But like you said, originally, places like Perry County, Wayne County, they may never get a private school down there because of the parameters we put in place yet to be in existence for 3 years. I hope that was a long answer to probably a short question.
There we go. Well, Scott, we love having you, but we know you got to go. We do appreciate you giving us an update.
Whenever I can squeeze out some more time, I'll come back and talk to you some more.
Please do. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Have a great day, guys.
See you.
visit your local Buick and GMC dealership first for new or pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. Parks Motor Sales. At Parks, professional sales staff makes shopping easy. Buick and GMC financing can put you in the vehicle you want, and certified technicians keep vehicles running great. Experience the new Buick at Parks Motor Sales. Go online to parksmotorsales.com. Find your favorite vehicle. Then stop by Parks at 919 Nashville Highway for a test drive. Parks GMC. We are professional grade.
Your home is your biggest investment. Getting the most for it when it comes time to sell is important. At The Way Realty, we help you get more by providing all our clients with a full-service real estate company. At no extra cost to you, we help you prepare your house to look its best with home staging, landscaping, professional pictures, marketing on all the major websites, touch-up repairs, and home inspection repairs up to $700. Get more with The Way Realty by reaching out to us to see what we can do for you and to find out the market value of your home. Visit us today at thewayrealtytn.com. Call us at 931-580-4669 or stop by our showroom at 800 Hatcher Lane, Columbia, Tennessee.
Hi, I'm Steve, the Garbage Man. Over 10 years ago, the Garbage Man Incorporated teamed up with former County Commissioner Mr. Glenn Hassey and Keep Murray County Beautiful to provide garbage service for the 8 boat ramps. The county brought in signs and posts, and we provided the carts and weekly service. The Garbage Man Incorporated is proud to be a part of furnishing a much-needed service to the boaters of Murray County. We live in Murray County, too, and are proud to be good corporate citizens. We encourage you to use and enjoy this convenience and keep the Duck River beautiful.
American Standard Heating and Air Conditioning is built to a higher standard, so you can focus on the problems in your life that actually matter, like the stair that only creaks when everyone else in the house is asleep. American Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, built to a higher standard.
Call Davis Heating and Cooling at 931-388-2090. Davis Heating and Cooling is your local American Standard dealer and proudly serves the Murray County area. Find Davis Heating and Cooling online and on Facebook or call today, 388-2090.
Hi, this is Dr. Wendy Tuohy from the Dr. Gill Center. Most chronic back problems are caused by compression from the disc becoming thinner and bulging as we get older. All we have to do is treat the disc by gently decompressing the spine. You may not have to rely on dangerous drugs, risky injections, and often unnecessary surgeries. If you are experiencing neck, back, hip, or leg pain, it's likely we can help you. Initial exam and x-rays, $39. Call me painfree.com or 615-551-9224.
For 40 years, the Jewelers Bench has worked hard for their customers and provided the highest quality jewelry at the best price. They keep going back. Recent renovations have allowed them to expand their inventory. More high-quality jewelry, custom vintage and estate pieces, and professional jewelry and watch repairs. They also buy gold. The Jewelers Bench, still here, still great service. 808 Trotwood Avenue, Columbia.
Hey, this is Seth Moss at Tennessee Valley Equipment, a premier FAE Primetech, Bandit, and Surex dealer. We are your dealer for all of your land clearing and forestry mulching needs. We sell equipment, provide repair service, and parts along with a rental fleet of mulching equipment. We also offer mulching teeth, blades, and sharpening. Our number one priority is getting you up and running as quickly and affordable as possible. Tennessee Valley is located at 300 Santa Fe Pike in wonderful Columbia, Tennessee. Stop by or give us a call today at 931-981-9812.
Life gets busy, and sometimes slowing down to buy your family quality food can seem impossible. This is Terry Taylor with Taylor Family Farm, and we offer local home delivery in addition to our local drop locations to help with that problem. Now you can get your favorite pastured poultry, pork, and grass-fed beef delivered right to your door. Visit TaylorFamilyFarmTN.com to find out how. We believe in healthy food, healthy people, and healthy community at Taylor Family Farm.
The Mules are back in town. Celebrate Mule Day's 50th anniversary, April 4th to 7th in downtown Columbia. All of your favorite Mule Day events are back. Jackpot Mule Races, Log Pulling, Auctioneers Championship, Miss Mule Day Pageant, the Driving and Gated Mule Shows, Liars Contest, and so much more. Don't miss the Mule Day Parade, 11 a.m. Saturday, April 6th. Mule Day's 50th anniversary, April 4th through the 7th in downtown Columbia. Visit MuleDay.com for a complete schedule of events.
Hello, everyone. It's Columbia Vice Mayor Randy McBroom here. We are thrilled to invite you all to Mule Day Celebration, April 4th through the 7th. From mule shows to craft fairs to live music to the Mule Day Parade on April 6th at 11 a.m., there's something for everyone during Mule Day. Join us as we come together to celebrate Columbia's history as we create lasting memories. Let's make Mule Day 2024 a true testament to our town's resilience and camaraderie. See you there. For more details, visit MuleDay.org.
Hi, Terry Tillis from Tillis Jewelry. When you think of diamonds, what do you think of? Rare, precious, timeless, sparkles like the sun. They're timeless and nothing like them on earth. Then do you think, where do I buy local to buy the perfect ring? Maybe a diamond pendant or earrings or maybe a new diamond band. Look no further. Tillis Jewelry carries all your diamond and jewelry needs. Stop by and see our wonderful collection. And remember, if you don't know your diamonds, know your jeweler. Tillis Jewelry, downtown Columbia.
Are you thinking about a new fence? Maybe you need a pole barn. Then you should give Sands Fence Company a call. That's 931-309-1644. Will Sands has built his business based on the principles of honesty, quality, and integrity. Sands Fence Company has been in business for over 20 years, providing the community with farm, residential, and commercial fencing, as well as pole barns and buildings. Call today for a free estimate. Sands Fence Company, 931-309-1644. 931-309-1644.
Feeling like lucky this month? Enter Happy Hiller's Golden Ticket Sweepstakes for a chance to win big for your home. Just visit HillerGoldenTicket.com and enter to win a Happy Hiller Club membership or a $1,000 or a $5,000 Hiller gift card. And everyone wins with 0% interest financing on HVAC systems, tankless water heaters, or whole home generators. Enter to win now at HillerGoldenTicket.com.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
This is Mark Curry at the Trailer Store. We are a local, family-owned business. Every day, I work with my wife, Susie, my mother, Becky, and my son, Justin. We offer a full line of lawnmower trailers, utility trailers, stock trailers, and a full line of trailer parts. We also offer service. Come see us at 1021 New Lewisburg Highway. Call us at 931-381-2795. That's 931-381-2795.
Do you have trees that need trimming or removed? Do you have stumps that you want ground? A1 Tree Removal is a family-owned and operated business local to Columbia and Lewisburg and servicing surrounding Middle Tennessee. They are licensed and insured and provide free estimates. No job is too big, no tree is too small. Give old Luke a call or text Luke at 931-359-3113, or you can check them out on Facebook and tell A1 Tree Removal that you heard this ad on the radio. If you love America, you will love A1 Tree Removal.
Debbie Matthews, realtor, and her husband Jason, who is a pro songwriter, also own a music publishing company. They live in historic downtown Columbia with their dogs. Dog rescue work is their passion project. They consider Middle Tennessee their backyard, and their lives are full of all things Tennessee. Debbie says there is no greater honor than to help someone find a home. To be trusted with that job, there is no greater privilege. Call Debbie at the Nashville Realty Group, 615-476-3224, 615-476-3224.
This is Trey Adcock with Dixie Equipment Sales and Rental. We sell ASV and Wacker Neuson equipment. We also rent a wide variety of compact equipment in the Middle Tennessee area. Come see us. We are located in Columbia, Tennessee at 200 East 16th Street. You can call us at 615-969-0118 or visit our website at www.dixiediesel.com. We have been in business for over 42 years and we would love to help you turn your project into reality.
Hey Tennessee, did you know that in the year 2022, more than 3,800 of your residents have lost their lives due to opioid overdose? Do your part to help lower these numbers by counting your medicine, locking it away, and disposing of it at a local medicine drop box location. You could also stop by your local health department and pick up a free medicine lock box. This project is funded under a grant contract with the State of Tennessee Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services.
Hello, this is Sergeant Brian Goetz with the Columbia Police Department. As a friendly reminder, the annual Mule Day Parade is Saturday, April 6th. If you plan on parking in a neighborhood close to the parade, please be courteous and don't block the right-of-way along driveways, sidewalks, and intersections. Follow the Columbia Police Department on Facebook at ColumbiaPDTN for the most up-to-date information. Thank you for your cooperation. Stay safe and enjoy the parade.
Back, Three News with a View. We had Representative Scott Specky on with us this morning, giving us an update on what's going on in the legislature. We thank him for that. It's sort of hard to figure out who's on first up there sometime. And right now, the legislature is in session. And between now and what I think he said about the 1st of May, when they adjourn, is when it's all going to happen or not. So
1st of May is not far away.
No, it's not. And Tennessee has a tradition of pretty short spring meetings of the legislature, which I would argue is a good thing. The less they're in session, probably the better off we all are.
You know, let me ask you guys a question.
All right, though. I'm dude number three, Dale Kennedy. Dude number two, Clayton Harris. What's the question, man?
If this thing was on a referendum, does anybody actually believe it would pass?
No, I
don't think there's any way it passes.
I'm just not so sure about that. I'm not so sure it would pass or it wouldn't pass. I don't have a real feel for
the question I wanted to ask Representative Klicka, and he didn't have time, and it probably is a good thing I didn't get a chance.
Mike Roden, a special guest.
Here I am.
Dude, every Monday. Good morning, man.
Good morning. The question I wanted to ask Representative Klicka, that it's probably a good thing I didn't get a chance to ask him. All the things he said that were in the House bill, that they put in the House bill to make it more palatable, all the things he's doing for public schools and so on, all those sound fairly reasonable. I'd have to read them to make sure, but they all sound really good the way he described them. Why don't you just pass that and take out the voucher part?
Well, yeah. I think he talked about that. If I understood him correctly, he said that's been tried in years past, and standing alone, they haven't been able to get them passed.
I'm almost sure he said that.
Yeah.
That's the strong-arm method they use. If they're going to put monies into the public school system, put the monies, like Mike's saying, into the public school system.
Well,
Ms. Shook,
like I said, I think I heard him right. He said that, let's see, there's better health insurance, more funding for public schools, less testing going to be required, things like that.
To the vouchers.
Yeah, and I'm a big believer in the ACT. I think the ACT testing is what is appropriate. I took the ACT back in my day, and look how I turned out.
Right.
Let me ask you a question.
My understanding is that those things have not been able to be viable as standalone provisions. Now, exactly why or how, I don't know.
Let me ask you this hypothetical question.
Okay.
Suppose this voucher program passes. People get the money. They want to send their kids to a school. Really, we don't have the data of what that school is doing in terms of performance because it's private. Suppose that's a failing school.
Well,
what happens
if it's
doesn't educate the kid?
If it's a failing school, I'm going to say it's probably not going to be in business. That's just my opinion. If people are having to pay,
it can be in business for a while, but before people catch on, it's failing.
That's an insult to parents, Mr. York.
I'm not saying this. I'm saying sometimes
they don't have enough sense to pick a good school.
Propaganda is out there so good that they sell a bill of goods to folks.
Sure.
Well,
sure.
Let's talk about something. I mean, Ms. York, I know your line always is that this is going to gut the public schools and hurt the public schools and blah, blah, blah. And, of course, you're a prior member of the school board. Clayton, you've got kids in public and private schools
right
now here in Maury County. The big story in Maury County, folks, and I've meant to talk about this for a while, in education in the last 40 years has been a mass exodus from the public schools to private schools and homeschooling. And when my son was born in 1983, there was one private school in the county. It was Columbia Academy. It might have had 200, 300, 400 students at most. Outside of that, everybody else was enrolled in the public schools. Well, look what's happened in the last 35, 40 years. Now, Columbia Academy's got well over 1,000. Zion, which didn't exist 40 years ago, has well over 1,000. Agathos has 500 to 600. And then we have basically an unknown number of homeschoolers out there in Murray County. I'm going to just use 1,500 as a ballpark figure. And so that means that in this county, we've got 13,000 kids enrolled in public school in Murray County. And now, because of the trend of the last 35, 40 years of an exodus from public schools, we've got approximately 4,000 kids in either private schools or homeschooling. And this is just rough. I mean, these are just rough estimates. So that means somewhere between a fifth and a fourth of all of our students are no longer in Murray County, are no longer enrolled in the public schools. They're in private schools or in homeschools. Now, somebody tell me, I mean, I've not heard anybody say our public schools have been ruined because everybody's left the public schools. And there has, you can't deny a mass exodus. And I'm just...
It's not a mass exodus, Del. It's just few people who can afford to go to private schools, can send their kids to private schools. One of the reasons is class sizes.
Going from 1% to 20 to 25% not enrolled in public schools is a mass exodus.
I think homeschooling...
I mean, vouchers will never get up to 20 or 25% of school students in a given county. That's just not going to happen.
Homeschooling has taken off, though. I mean,
homeschooling has really taken off.
That you said a minute ago that you didn't know how many are in homeschooling. That disturbs me a little bit. It seems like we should have a number.
And the fact that you are disturbed by that disturbs me. People like Tiffany Boyd who don't want you to know.
Let me say this.
That's why she wants a constitutional amendment.
Well, I understand that. And I have great respect for people who homeschool and do it right. I have a niece in East Tennessee who has homeschooled her kids, and they're terrific, and they're now in public school, and they're way ahead of everybody else.
But there are those.
I'm just saying there are those who homeschool and do a great job, and there are those who don't.
And again,
and I just think there should be some accountability to that.
I understand what you're saying, but I don't want to speak for Ms. Boyd, but she got a large, you know, they're a very active group in support of homeschooling.
And that's good, as long as there's accountability.
Their response, I think, would be, no, my child does not belong to the state. And my child, homeschool, my business, not yours. That would be their response.
They do tend to connect with Christian churches to get homeschooling.
They don't seem to have a problem traveling on state roads and using other state resources. So I understand. Yeah, my child does not belong to the state, does not belong to the government. I understand that mindset. I'm just saying, yeah, but how far are you going
to
take that?
All right, but let's get back to the
Murray County pass a resolution against the vouchers.
When you go
When's the next school board meeting?
Oh, it'll be coming up pretty quick.
And what difference would that make? They have absolutely no power. And, I mean, everybody knows, it doesn't make a damn bit of difference, Mr. York. I mean,
well, it makes a difference or not. It's the action of the school board, your local school board, whether it supports vouchers or not.
The county commission can do the same thing. The educational establishment has made it crystal clear that they're against this thing.
I think everybody's against it for the most part.
Well, they may be. But what I want to know, the boogeyman everybody keeps throwing up. And like I said, I've said, you know, I'm not too big on this voucher business either. My problem with it is it plays into Mike's theory that my child belongs to the state.
I'm just saying that if you take that to the logical conclusion, then you need to be state roads.
I want to send my child to a private school where the state's got nothing damn to do with it whatsoever.
That's the thing. If you're going to have the voucher thing, have it amongst, if you want the competition, have it amongst the public schools. Don't involve the private schools.
I don't want the state monkeying around in my private school at all.
Well, and if they're going to get public money, they need to produce public data on educating the children.
Ms. York, you keep changing the subject. yes, they are going to have to take the TCAP testing, and that will be out there as data to see how the schools are doing. But I'm just – so I'm being a devil's advocate here. What harm – it is a mass exodus, Ms. York. When you go from 1% to 20 – up to 25%, fully one-quarter of your students in the county have left the public schools and gone to either private schools or home don't interrupt me – have gone to private schools or homeschooling. That is a mass exodus. Now,
well, when you don't build public schools, what do you think's going
to
happen?
Well, I want to know. Everybody keeps raising the boogeyman of harm to the public schools because of it. I want to know what, if any, and I don't know the answer to this question at all, and I don't have a preconceived notion. What, if any, has been the harm of this mass exodus from Maury County Public Schools to private and homeschooling in the last 35 years? Well, for one thing, I don't know the answer to this question, and I don't have an agenda here.
Well, for one thing, let's use your terminology and say there has been a mass exodus going from 1% to 25%. Okay, there are probably a multitude of reasons for that. It's probably not just one reason. I don't believe it's because public schools are terrible. I think the public schools around here are very good.
Well,
so I don't think it's that. I think Clayton pointed out that there are more private schools now. And if you've got some money, I sent my kids to private school. I sent one of my kids to public school. You know, so I've had both experiences.
Right.
And it could be that, hey, I got some extra dough. My kid needs some attention in this particular area, or there's opportunities for, you know, if my kid's artsy and there's a better art program in this private school, sure. And
I don't have a belief that the people have left the public schools in Maury County because they're fleeing from the public schools. I mean, you're right. They've probably left for hundreds of reasons.
Sure.
Well, I mean, you look at the media, and you look at how we're able to cover things. I mean, you think about Columbine, you think about – that probably has – some of the school shootings, let's be honest, has probably caused some folks across the country to say, you know, I'm going to homeschool my kids. My wife says it every time she hears one.
Well, I don't know if mass shootings –
but I'm talking about the trend, though. I think this is the Maury County trend. This is a nationwide trending. When you're talking about homeschooling and private school, I think it's a national trend that's been going on for the last
20 years. Safety, I think, is a factor.
Correct.
Bullying, particularly in these larger public schools, bullying of both girls and boys is a factor. And so you can go enroll your kid in a private school where, you know, you can say, you know, you let my kid get bullied here, you won't be doing business with me anymore.
Sure.
And
Clayton, I think you hit on something. Because public schools used to be
the safest
place that you could take your kid, public schools. And then we've had all these mass shootings across the country for years, and private schools were open and didn't have as much activity.
You know how many,
now the private schools are being hit.
How many mass shootings have we had in Maury County over the past 35 years? Zero. Absolutely zero. Now, how much?
Don't tempt fate. Don't say that.
Yeah, but how much
and
bullying?
You're praying every day that nothing happens in Maury County.
Exactly.
I am.
Safety is an issue people leave public schools. One issue alone, not the issue.
I would say it's a big issue.
Well, private school. I think the big trend is homeschooling. That to me is really a big trend
I don't have a problem with as long as I have some assurance that the kids are going to be educated.
Trips every day.
Exactly.
Folks, I'm just trying to throw this stuff out there for thought. And I don't know exactly where the train of thought takes you, but what's happened in the last 35 years in public education and private education, the homeschooling in Maury County is a fact.
Issue, Delk, is that accountability issue that Mike pointed out. If private schools are getting public money and there's no accountability, that's not kosher.
Well, that's why I don't want the I'm against it. I want the private schools to be accountable to me as a parent and grandparent, and nobody else. All right, see you later.
Have a great day, folks.
Bye-bye.